look up in the sky. Think about the blessings, all the blessings that you got. It's a great day to be alive.
Welcome to Faith in Sports. Hello, I'm your host, Rick Bowles, and my co-host is James Cardell.
Hello there.
Our producer is James Bridges, a.k.a. JB. Faith in Sports will be highlighting coaches, student athletes, and all things SAGU athletics. SAGU is a Christian university located in the heart of Waxahachie, Texas. But tonight, I'm excited to branch out a bit and bring out one of my best friends, retired Major League Baseball All-Star and Texas Rangers Hall of Famer, Jim Sundberg. Hello, Jim.
Hey, Rick. Best friend?
I said one.
I was going to say.
I didn't say.
Does he make it on your list, Jim? I'm just curious.
He didn't have to respond. Yeah. He's one of my best friends.
Well, it's my privilege to be here with you guys.
But I have about 30 best friends, but don't feel bad about that.
I understand that.
Mr. Carnell, yes. Last week's we've been opening up and talking about your favorite MLB team, the St. Louis Cardinals. So, Jim, hang in there.
Come on, Jim. It's okay. It's okay.
We get Carnell's weekly update. The Cardinals beat the Pirates last night 3-0.
3-0, yes.
But are currently 6-8.
6-8.
So what are you taking? What's your thoughts
starting
on the Cardinals
pitching.
So far?
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Starting pitching is just... You can see a little traction. Maybe, Flaherty's had a better game last night. Woodard actually did much better than he has in the past. But, starting pitching. Wainwright pitched his bullpen. He's supposed to go do a little rehab assignment. He should be back top of the rotation. I mean, dude, 41, and the guy is still pitching.
Unbelievable.
Adam Wainwright, unbelievable.
Yeah. So you're depending on one pitcher.
No. I mean, it's across the board. These guys just, they're just like they're getting too deep in the bullpen, and our bullpen's worn out right now in the early part of the season. But, excuses.
So, Jim,
a couple weeks ago,
he was blaming the fact that a lot of the guys were playing in the World Baseball.
Well, we did have 17 guys in the World Baseball Classic. I mean, I always attribute that to a little bit of a
What are your thoughts, Jim? Do you think that bothers the guys going into the season?
Well, it seems to me that they are a little bit in front of some of the other guys because they've had to kind of stay ready and prepare and then to play those highly contested games. But I didn't follow it a lot, but I would think chemistry. Just kind of getting together as a team and working together would make a difference.
Yeah.
And
that's kind of what I've seen. It's just they're not clicking.
Yeah.
And you can see when the team is. I mean, the Rangers, young team, but man, they're clicking.
Yeah.
They look like they're backing each other up, got their act together.
Well, speaking of the Texas Rangers.
Speaking of which, they
put the whoop on the Astros last night, 8-5, with the help of Garcia's 2-run home run. He's going to be a star, don't you think, Jim? Or maybe he already is.
Probably already is. Yeah. He's just been a mainstay in the middle of that lineup and really performing well. He's a pretty consistent guy that they have there right in the middle.
Well, in case you don't know, Jim was a catcher all of his career.
What?
So tell us.
I squatted. That's why I just had my first hip replacement.
But that's not bad.
And my knee's next.
It's not bad after, 40 years?
Yeah. 40 years post-career.
Right.
Well, as mentioned earlier, our guest is Mr. Sundberg. Jim, we met probably 8 or 9 years ago in one of your favorite Italian restaurants in Arlington. I don't know if you remember that or not. But I was working for the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and soon after that meeting, we named a golf tournament after you, and you graciously decided to come on our board of directors and became my chairman. So those were some good days. We stayed in touch, and you're still helping a little bit with FCA.
Yeah.
So it's good, and you've come out here, and you've been on campus here a little bit. In fact, we're going to go watch a game here in a little bit. But well, let's just jump in here to some questions here, and we want to let our audience know a little bit more about you. So when did you know you were pretty gifted at baseball? What point in your mind did you go, I can play this game?
Well, I would say pretty early on. When I was in Little League, as a 10-year-old, I played in a 9- to 12-year-old league, and as a 10-year-old, I hit 15 home runs in 15 games. I hit, I think, 3 in one game.
Wow.
And so, and that was as a 10-year-old. So there, I was playing with two age groups that were higher. So I was kind of getting attention. And at that point, and then, of course, I got into high school. And it was in my junior year that scouts began to follow me pretty regularly and through my high school season.
Have you always been a catcher in like in junior high and high school? Did you catch?
Yeah, I caught. I actually played shortstop 1 year in high school because we had a senior that was a catcher, and so when he left, then I took over my junior year, and I've been catching ever since. I did have a chance to play the outfield in the major leagues a few times, but it was so boring, and I can't believe they get paid
to stand
for playing, standing out there, and just running every occasionally.
Yeah,
you know, I could never figure that out.
We were out there recently, and we were in the outfield, and I'm still amazed. I wasn't very good, but I played a little baseball in younger years, but. It's back in those days, you know, the ball wasn't hit near as high, obviously, and far. But I remember just, you know, how sometimes it's a little scary trying to follow that ball. But these guys, I mean, they can catch it with their eyes closed. I mean, it's just amazing how they immediately almost know where that ball's going.
Yeah.
You know?
I used to be catching coordinator for the Rangers, and so I was in charge of the catchers, and we would get the pitching machine out and crank it up and shoot them straight up in the air and almost till you can't even really see them. But we would invent stuff. We like have the guys lay on the ground face down, and as soon as they heard the ball go up, they stand up and do one circle and then try to find the ball and
that's
go
crazy.
Get it.
That's
so you can get pretty good at catching a ball with those kind of drills.
And when you practice as much as you do, that's in any sport, right? You practice, you're going to get better. So tell us a little bit about your story and how you got to the major leagues.
Well, as I was saying earlier, the scouts started following me in my junior year. And then in my senior year, I was drafted out of high school by Oakland. In the fifth round, decided not to go to play ball at that time. I went to University of Iowa, signed, and had a baseball scholarship, and played 3 years there, was drafted again, and decided not to sign, and then was drafted a third time in the winter of 73, and decided then to go ahead and start playing. Went to double-A ball and then to the big leagues and played for Billy Martin in 74.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. How long were you in the minors?
1 year in the minor leagues.
Okay. Right. So I know you've told me this story, but you know, there's more people listening than just me. But why so many? What did it take, and why did it take 3 drafts for you to kind of say, hey, this is what I want to do?
Well, I didn't think emotionally that I was really ready out of high school. Mm-hmm. I thought I needed, and physically I didn't think I was that strong, and so the college years helped me to kind of grow physically and emotionally a little bit. And then the second time I was drafted, the scout had come into town and goes, you can't hit, you can't catch. Everything you throw in the center field. You're never going to make it to the big leagues. But I'll give you a chance for $6,000. Well, that was not what you wanted to hear. And so that's the reason why I didn't sign. And then Texas turned around and drafted me again the next draft. And I was really surprised. I picked up the phone and called a guy. After the third time I was drafted, I picked up the phone and called a man that I had played for one summer in college ball, who had pretty good MLB connections. And so he said, well, Jim, you know, the Rangers, they don't really have any catching, and you could probably move up very really quick. I would bypass the scout and go right to the farm director and tell him you want a little bit more money and you want the incentive bonus and the rest of your college education paid for. So I did that. I went to the farm director, made those requests, and he said, done.
Wow. Wow.
So then that's how I signed. So a little bit of just a little more money, but a little affirmation by a guy I played for in a summer ball who really thought I could move up quick. And as it did, I moved up pretty quick.
Wow, that's cool. Awesome. So let's talk about the teams you played for when you're in your Major League Baseball career. So you were drafted by the Rangers.
Right.
So let's talk about what other teams did you play for in your career?
Well, I played my first 10 years for the Rangers, and I went to Milwaukee for what I call a year of recovery. And then I went to Kansas City for a couple of years, won a championship.
Now, what year was that?
85.
85.
And it would have to be against the Cardinals.
I vaguely remember.
The Cardinals.
Vaguely remember that series. I'm from St. Louis area, south of St. Louis area, and we have joked before. Yeah. About that series, Cardinals thought they had it, right?
Oh, they were on paper much better than us, but our pitching staff went into high gear, mm-hmm. and they had a great series. I think they held the Cardinals to hitting under 200, and then Vince Coleman was out. He had gotten hurt. He was out.
Do you remember how he got hurt?
On the tarp, the rain tarp.
They were rolling the rain tarp and got him caught. And
no way.
Yes,
that guy got fired.
Our number one fastest man on the team, number one stolen bases. Yeah, that was funny. Not funny. It wasn't funny at the time. But then, of course, you know, everybody wants to blame. You know, was it Decker? Is that his name? The umpire.
The umpire
that blew that call at first base.
Yeah.
And, you know, later, you know, he was good-natured about it and said, yeah, you know, I missed the call. But, you know, it was what it was. But nonetheless, not taking anything away from you guys, I mean, it was a great series.
It was a great series.
You know, we were torn in Missouri because, you know, it's called the I-70 series,
right.
Being in St. Louis and Kansas City. So, Kansas City is my second favorite team. You know.
Oh, that's good.
So where do the Rangers come in?
The Rangers.
Fifth?
I probably attended more Rangers games than any other Major League baseball team in America.
Yeah.
So that gives it something right there. But, yeah. So you played for the Rangers, you said Kansas City.
And then went to the Cubs for a year and a half.
And the Cubs.
My childhood team.
Wow.
In Galesburg, Illinois, where I grew up, you were either a Cub fan or a Cardinal fan.
Yeah.
And I was a Cub fan.
So you were on that side of the street.
Yeah. So that's why it made it more important when we beat the Cardinals in '85.
Yeah.
World Series. But
that's funny.
And then I went back and played my final year and a half for the Rangers. So I played 16 years, and played 11 and a half here in Arlington.
Awesome. So your faith story. Let's talk about that. I read your book, by the way. Thank you, Rick, for giving me that book.
Sure.
And
thanks, Jim, for giving me that book.
Thank you for reading it.
It actually has a very prominent place in my house. I won't tell you where, but it has a very prominent place in my house that I read it quite often.
Uh-huh.
So let's talk about your faith story. How did you get to where you are in your faith? What was that whole foundation?
Well, I grew up in the church, and I went religiously every Sunday. My parents made sure that I went every Sunday. When I got to college, I actually stopped going entirely. And then when I signed and came to Texas, we started going to church. But it wasn't until 1977, at the age of 26, that in a hotel room in Toronto, that I accepted Christ into my life. And I was reading a book, Late Great Planet Earth, by Hal Lindsey. And so I got to a point in there, and God moved on my heart. And I just rolled around on my knees and prayed and asked God to come into my life and begin to shape and mold it and make me into the person he wanted me to be. And he did at that time. And so that's when it started, 77. So that's over 40 years, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. So it's been a great journey. Not always things always go your way, but... the Lord has a way of making things work for good, and it's been the best thing in my life.
That's awesome. I really do enjoy your devotion. I love when you can tie sports in with your faith, and I love sports, and so it's one of my favorite things to do is just read devotionals. I have one on fishing too that I love. And I'm trying to remember who wrote that. It's one of the famous bass fishermen. So anyway, let's talk about your favorite pitcher to catch. So you spent all your career behind the plate, right? Mm-hmm. Who was your favorite?
Favorite guy.
And the second follow-up was going to be, who was your least favorite?
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I caught 9 Hall of Famers in my 16 years, and Ferguson Jenkins would probably be my favorite. He just had the best control. We had great chemistry between us. Catching him was like having a night off, basically. In fact, in 75, we teamed up to, I think still it still is the fastest game in Ranger history. I think it was an hour and 40 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we got beat 1-0 by the A's, but he just is a phenomenal guy to work with, great control. Just learned a lot of good stuff from him as a catcher. The hardest is Charlie Huff, the knuckleballer.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
You don't, because you don't catch a knuckleball. You kind of, you know, block it to the ground and pick it up and throw it back. And
so when you catch it, you're like, woo!
Oh, yeah. That's a victory.
Wow.
That's a victory.
I can imagine. So, I've caught a few knuckleballers just playing catch. I had a guy that threw a great knuckleball. And you... It's, yeah, I probably got hit in the nose a couple of times because.
Oh, you can.
Yeah.
I got hit in the mask. I got hit in the mask in Baltimore. I was catching a Charlie Huff in an early April game in Baltimore, and it was snowing, and it was blowing into my eyes, and he threw one high, and I went up with my glove, and it hit me right in the mask. And so I used to have these nightmares where I would jump up in bed and kind of startled, and Janet would say, "Oh, you're having another Charlie Huff dream." I go, "Yeah, I am."
Well, since we were talking about favorites, you mentioned Billy Martin. So who, if you don't mind
I have a lot sharing. Of questions about yeah, that relationship.
Right. I'm sure he's got a lot of stories, but who was your favorite manager to play with?
Dick Houser.
Okay. And that was Dick with the Rangers, was, right?
No, he was with the Royals.
Oh, was he?
Okay.
He's with the Royals. Dick Houser, yeah.
What was it about him that you enjoyed the most?
Well, he was very knowledgeable, consistent, and just a good leader. He was just a good leader. And I think we ended up having kind of, a connection. You know, having won the World Series together. And then in 1986, the next year, he came to the mound to take David Cone out of the game and right before the All-Star break. And I looked and I said, "Dick, you look really tired." And he goes, "You know, I really haven't been feeling very good." And the new pitcher came on the mound and he left. And then 3 days later, he collapsed. Oh. And after taking him to the hospital, they realized he had brain cancer, and he would die within a year.
Wow.
But he it was interesting because after he got back from the hospital, and he had me come over to the house, and it was a very kind of special time. And he said, "You know, there's something different about you, and I wanted to find out what that is." And of course, the only thing I could go to was my faith. And so I did. I happened to talk to him. And at some point, he became a believer. I don't know if it was that day, but he became a believer and started telling us, sharing his story before he passed away.
Wow.
So, but he was a great man of the game, consistent, very consistent guy. And you knew what to expect from him. And I think that's what made him so good.
Are you willing to tell us who the most challenging manager you worked for?
Doug Rader.
Okay, I remember that
Doug
name.
Doug Rader, yeah. That was a hard year. That was 1983, and he really just didn't want me on the team. I had been traded the winter before to the Dodgers. There was a trade consummated, and I had a no-trade clause in my contract, and it's kind of a long story, but it had to do with my contract. I told our general manager, I said, before you make the – he actually called me in before the winter meetings and said, "I think I'm going to try to move you." And he said – and I said, "Well, make sure they know about the contract." And he said, "Oh, yeah, no problem." And so the trade was made. When they found out about the contract, they wanted me to sign a new contract for a 30% cut. And I said, "I don't bleed Dodger blue that much to take a 30% cut off of an already guaranteed contract.
Yeah.
And so I said, no deal. And so that was, then I was on that team. I had been traded. The Rangers didn't want me, and I'd been traded. And so I was with a manager that didn't want me.
Right.
And it was a rough year. Yeah. And before I went to Milwaukee the next year.
I'm getting sidetracked here, but it just reminds me of something I've thought about a lot. So did you have an agent for your did you have an agent to help you with your contract?
I did.
But were you able to insert anything you wanted to, as far as, did you talk mainly to your agent, or did you feel free to talk to management or whatever during the
Well, at that time I felt that I could talk to management, and it was just at the time where I was actually bringing in that I had this agent, and that wasn't really working out that well, and so I was took over some of the duties of myself in negotiating.
Interesting.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that's over my head.
That's going to be fun. Say,
over my head.
I want cool water in my.
Yeah. I want a sweet.
Yeah.
You've along the years, you've told me some really incredible stories, and I love hearing your stories. So what is a favorite memory or funny story from your days in the MLB? Just something that kind of pops in your head here. You've got a lot of them, I know.
Funny story.
Or memorable.
Memorable. Yeah. Well, the memorable one was when we were playing the Toronto Blue Jays, and the Kansas City Royals was the first team to come from behind, being down 3-1 and win. And we did it twice. Did it against Toronto, and then we did it against the Cardinals.
St. Louis Cardinals.
Cardinals. I have to say that twice. And so, we had just finished winning game 5, and we were on our way to Toronto. I was on an airplane, and I was looking out, and all of a sudden I heard deep in my spirit, something good is going to happen. And, it caused me to tear up, and Janet said, "What's going on?" I said, "Man, I just had an experience, a God moment, and I heard something good's going to happen." And that's all it was. And so we played game 6 in Toronto. We won it, but there was no confirmation of what I experienced on the plane that actually played out in game 6. But it was going to be played out in game 7. And so we got to game 7. And I was in the on-deck circle. We had runners at first and second, and Steve Balboni was hitting. And I stepped in the on-deck circle, and I heard, "This is the moment. Get ready. This is the moment. Get ready." I go, "Whoa." Again, deep in my spirit, I heard this. And sure enough, the bases were loaded. I got up, got a pitch to hit, and hit it high into right field off the top of the wall, got a triple, scored 3 runs. And it's probably the single best moment in my career was that particular hit, because it sent us into the World Series. And it was just a very unique moment that it's almost like I couldn't mess it up. Wow. And
did you know, cool, as soon as you hit the ball, that was what the Lord had been,
yes,
putting in your spirit?
Yeah.
That's neat.
Wow.
Now, you've told me some practical jokes that you guys probably play on each other all the time, but the one about the jersey, the mix up, you remember that one? Share that one.
Yeah, I was with the Cubs, and we were in Dodger Stadium. Now, the Cubs are amazing. They are liked unbelievable across the nation. And so when I played for the Cubs, I couldn't believe just how popular they were. And we're in Dodger Stadium, and I was not playing that day. And I put my uniform on, came out of the dugout, started working my way to the bullpen. And people would say, "Sandberg, Sandberg, give me your autograph." And I'm thinking, It's Sundberg. But what happened, we had Ryan Sandberg was on the team, and there's just one letter difference in our name. And we kind of both had dark hair, and we looked similar. And as I was working my way down to the bullpen, they're constantly going, Sandberg. And I'm just starting to get a little irritated, internally. I don't get mean at anybody, but I'm kind of wanting to think, look at the back of the jersey. Sundberg, come on. And so I get into the game, I get into about the third inning, and all of a sudden the light bulb came on. And I thought, oh, no. So I got up quietly, went into the bathroom, got in front of the mirror, looked at the back of my jersey, and it said Sandberg. They had put Sandberg. They had played a trick on me and put Sandberg's jersey in my locker, and I didn't notice it when I put it on.
Oh, that's funny.
And so they had a good laugh about it that day. I actually got into the game. I had to run up into the locker room and change my jersey before I got back into the game.
Yeah, because I don't think they'd want you on the field with the wrong. Now, one more story. You were telling me about how you had been hurt, and you were, I guess, not even catching in the bullpen because you had been hurt. And you weren't expecting to go in, and you got a phone call about.
Oh.
Yeah, tell us that story.
That one. I was with the Chicago Cubs, and I was sitting on the bench, and it was in my 14th year in the big leagues. Now, I had been I've been a starting catcher for 13 years, but now when I went to Chicago, I was sitting on the bench. Jody Davis was the catcher, and I was sitting on the bench, and I hadn't really been playing for 2 weeks. And for 2 weeks, I hadn't played. I mean, when you haven't played for 2 weeks, you don't know the direction to home plate. you don't know which.
Is it still the same size?
It's still the same size, and it's still in the same area. How do I get there? Take a left, take a right, and you'll find it. And so I'm sitting on the bench and talking to Scott Sanderson, a friend of mine. We're actually deep into a Christian theology. We were so deep into this thing, we had no idea what was going on in the game. And so the only thing I knew about the game was we were playing the Padres. I mean, I wasn't paying attention to the innings or outs or score or anything, and so all of a sudden I thought I heard my name mentioned, and I asked Scott next to me. I said, "Somebody say my name?" He goes, "Yeah, looks like Gene Michaels. He wants you to hit." I go, "Hit? He is an idiot. There's no way I can hit. I haven't played in 2 weeks. If he even knew that, he wouldn't even be asking me to hit." And so I looked down there, and sure enough, he was motioning with his finger to come down there. So I got down there, and he said, "Grab a bat. I want you to hit for the pitcher." And I froze because I hadn't brought my bat or my helmet into the dugout that day because I hadn't played in 2 weeks.
Why do you need it?
Why do I need it? Exactly. And so frantically, I run up to the tunnel into the locker room where the bat rack is, and I try to find my bat and helmet, and they're yelling at me the whole time to get back down here in the dugout. And the umpires come over to the dugout, want to know where I'm at, and I can't find my bat or helmet. So I just grab a bat and a helmet and head back to the dugout. And I get into the dugout, and then the umpire scorns me. "Let's go, Sundberg. You're filling up my game." And so I kind of step up the steps into the on-deck circle, and really, the only thing I did know was we were playing the Padres. I had no other
idea. You didn't know who was pitching.
Who was pitching, the innings, the outs, anything. And I went to put my helmet on, and it was too small. It didn't fit, and it hurt my ears. I remember hurting my ears. I looked at the bat, and the bat's about an inch too short. And so
all of these contributed to you, right? Your success?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And my attitude. My attitude, which was that the manager was an idiot. I can't believe that he's calling on me.
He
doesn't know what he's doing. So I start to process the game, and I look up, and we're in the fifth inning. We're down 6-1. I'm going, oh, that's why he's using me. He didn't want to use one of his best guys right now. He just wants to throw me out there as a sacrificial lamb, you know, to try to do something. But so the fifth inning, down 6-1, one out, bases loaded.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I look on the mound, and there's a guy that I've never hit before, McCullers. And his son's playing for the Pigeons for Houston now. And so I go, this manager, if he knew the he's an idiot. Stop, Sundberg. Get a plan together. Get your act together. And so I thought, well, I'll step up there. I'll try to look for a fastball up over the plate, try to get it to the outfield, score, sacrifice, fly. And so the pitcher winds up, throws, boom! The ball goes over the fence. And I remember running around first base going, that's the smartest manager I've ever seen in my life.
Manager of the Year Award, the manager, right?
He never used me to pitch hit again, but I got one chance and hit a home run.
And you're telling him, I made you look good. Did you tell him that?
It's like I closed my eyes and swung and the ball goes over.
That's hilarious.
I love that, though. I mean, that's just a great, great story.
That's a perfect example, you know, of, you know, just close your eyes and swing. Yeah, it's a perfect example. Lord knows best sometimes.
You keep showing up.
Yeah,
yep. Got to
exactly.
Show up.
You show up.
Yeah. Well, Jim, thank you so much.
That's awesome.
All
this
right,
has
guys.
Been great. And
enjoyed it.
Close out the show. JB.
VCR is very proud to promote their brand on this broadcast. Driven by producing quality LED video boards and state-of-the-art audio and video production systems at affordable prices, VCR now makes sure to listen to your needs as an athletic department, business, or church before recommending the next best steps. Come by the SAGU campus and visit the Schaefer Activity Center and check out our very own double-sided LED scoreboard provided by VCR Now.
That is our show for this week. Faith in Sports is a broadcast property of SAGU, a Christian university located in Waxahachie, Texas, and has over 70 undergraduate and graduate degrees, including on-campus and online options. Faith in Sports is sponsored by VCRNow.com. Visit SAGU.edu for more information. Also, stay up to date with all things SAGU athletics at SAGULions.com.
See ya.